Well, not a bad day in Auckland, the City of Sails today, and this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. You've just been listening to our theme music from Joe Cocker. I noticed that our guests were a little bit moving around listening to Joe, so I'm host Sheldon Brown. We've got technician Declan Curran here. And Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. And we do have a survey out on SurveyMonkey, just soliciting some opinion about Take It From Us. Not flooded with response so far. So if you haven't received that and would like to fill out the survey, please just send me an email at sheldon.brown@framework.org.nz. So today we talk to two leaders with lived experience who are identified in a new Like Minds, Like Mine campaign as tall trees. And I've been reminded that one of these I've interviewed before about her involvement in theatre and the production of a play called Mockingbird. Yeah. So our guests are Lisa Brickell and Shreya Rao. They've recently completed training and are training others in a Tall Trees, the Tall Trees campaign, a campaign known as Rakau Roroa. And that roughly translates as tall trees. Tall trees captures connotations of the strength, resilience, and leadership of people with lived experience, rising from the roots to the branches of our whenua, connecting and supporting one another to grow. In short, the goal of Rakau Roroa is growing mental health leaders for the future. So welcome, Lisa and Shreya, to Take It From Us. That sounds like a big job.
Kia ora, thanks for having us.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a big job.
Yes, definitely. Exciting job, though.
An exciting job, Shreya. You're excited about the potential of this?
I think we're so ready for it. I think with the last election and mental health being such a big issue, people really rallying around the cause, I think we're really ready for to take our mental health advocacy to the next level.
Right. Well, it's a wonderful sort of climate that we're working in, isn't
yeah.
it? Because mental health is sort of top of the pops in some ways. Just about every day I check on my phone what the latest news is. You know, mental health is definitely grabbing the headlines and yeah, it's a new atmosphere that we're working in. Do you think that's going to be conducive to what Tall Trees is about?
Definitely, I think coming in on the back of a lot of conversations, that's where we're going to see the change in having a bunch of tall trees who know how to have conversations in a safe way and have key messages that we know address stigma and discrimination
yeah.
Will only enhance the existing conversations to a space where we can see, you know, are people experiencing positive reactions in their community.
Right. Well, there's a lot of talk about conversations in New Zealand society. Lisa, have you sort of caught up with that?
Conversations that we're having at the moment?
Well, you know, we're being asked to have conversations about a lot of social issues. You know, I think that organisations are asking us to put our heads up above the parapet and talk about whether it be domestic violence or mental health or the prison population or who makes up the prison population.
Mm.
You know, there's a climate, I think, which is encouraged by this government.
Yes.
To have conversations.
Yeah, to actually have dialogue around all of these different issues. And one thing when we were doing the training, we talked about the power of contact, and that's about having that connection and that contact with all sorts of people who might have differing views from us,
right.
but having that connection and that kind of equal status and that, you know, really trying to connect with them and reduce stigma and discrimination this way. I think that's a real key, is that for that face-to-face,
right.
actual, you know, contact, yeah. dialogue, conversation.
Well, and contact and connection are so important in mental health, aren't they? Because we hear about people being isolated, perhaps in a whole week, the only person they might talk to is their community support worker or peer support worker. Have you, either of you ever been in that sort of situation where your mental health has caused you to become isolated?
Yeah, definitely. I think for many, many years, your only contact is staff. People are paid to be there. And I think increasingly there's more and more people in our community who, you know, that's their only social contact. Interesting for me as a young person, going online, making contact that way was helpful. I got to have hard conversations in an anonymous way. And also for me, talking about hard stuff out loud is way too, you know, it's way above me. So, yeah. But typing it up, weirdly, a lot easier. So, yeah, I guess some people disagree with me on that, but that was my kind of experience. Found that the online world helped me come back into the real space, which is where the healing happened.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's often very much about disclosure, isn't it? Disclosing our emotional or mental health issues and fronting up to that. Lisa, you've been in the studio before a couple of years ago. You reminded me and about the production. You were the producer of Mockingbird, the play? Or?
Yeah, I was. So I wrote it and I was one of the actors in it. And, yeah, and just talking about isolation as she relates directly to that play in my own experience. But, you know, there's so many different models of well-being, but pretty much every model has that, you know, that sort of whānau or the community or that connection, that support, for, you know, is such an important part of that model. And for me personally, that was a huge help for me.
Right.
The support from whānau definitely, but also friends and also, you know, community. I'm also part of a Buddhist organisation, so support from that organisation. So, yeah, that's helped me personally with my own mental health.
Well, we have a great supporter of Buddhism who's a psychologist who comes in. She's done about 25 different shows as a psychologist talking about things like anxiety and depression and post-traumatic. Vicky Baer.
Yeah, she's a good friend of mine, and she's the one that put us in touch years ago.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh,
so we're part of the same organisation and we do a lot of work around this as well through that organisation.
Yeah. Well, she took me along to a chanting exercise in Newmarket and, I really loved that actually.
Yeah.
It was very sort of energetic and I ended up sort of sweat all over me doing this chanting. But, Shreya, you've worked as a consumer advisor for a DHB. I mean, all of that suggests and what you disclosed about talking online about your mental health, what occurred in your life to cause challenges with mental health?
Cool. So I think lots of different stuff, I don't think we all come in with one thing that really set it all off for us. Firstly, I think, and the biggest thing for me was just growing up in a home, like a lot of young people, where there were a dynamic there that made me feel really unsafe. I happened to grow up with parents who had their own incredibly challenging childhoods and unfortunately didn't get any support with it. And so I grew up as adults who struggled, you know, struggled to be parents, struggled to be, you know, in a marriage, spouses, and be able to cope with everyday life. And as a result, I experienced that stress vicariously and directly. So lots of family violence, lots of physical abuse. And, yeah, that was challenging to have to handle as a young person. And I think the second thing, you know, that's really big and it is still kind of ongoing, but I hold it in a different way now, is my ethnic identity. So I was born in India. I'm Indian. And I came to New Zealand when I was 7 and grew up in New Zealand and fairly acculturated, you know. But still, like a lot of people of colour struggle with feeling connected in terms of my cultural identity to New Zealand, you know. Like there's this constant opposing process between your ancestral culture and New Zealand, mainstream Pākehā culture. I always felt like the world that I occupied wasn't made for me. And for me, healing from that was about integrating the two in my own bespoke way, you know, my own bespoke cultural identity. But that's a really hard and challenging thing to have to kind of create.
How was your transition from India to New Zealand? You know, you were quite young. I guess you left friends behind, school behind, all of those things, had to come into a new environment. Do you think that contributed?
No, interestingly. My sister and I did pretty well. We really enjoyed school. I think the defining thing for us was that we came into a community that had... It was very multicultural. So I grew up in Mount Ross School, and diversity was celebrated, and being different was all good. So it was easy to, you know, transition there. Yeah. What really was difficult was my parents coming into... a context that's not actually very different to right now, where immigration was a hot button topic, where immigrants were portrayed as, you know, rotting the system, taking jobs, you know, having cultural values that were not compatible with Kiwi culture.
Buying our properties.
Yeah. So they really struggle with that. They experience the direct racist vitriol that... I was lucky to be shielded from in a very safe and loving community. So, yeah.
I was just going to quickly jump in there and say, you know, with the whole prejudice thing, do you think that's because people don't understand cultures enough, the cultures?
Yeah, I think what people don't understand, like, I can only speak from an Indian perspective, so I'm, yeah, just going to start from there, is that we are a country of a billion people.
Right.
A billion people. You look at Parliament, just the difference of opinion amongst white males there. You imagine that over a billion people, different gender, different religion, different, actually different cultural context as well, because I'm different from another Indian, from another part of India, right? So I think, yeah, what I see is this homogenising of our entire community. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's like Christchurch, South Island versus the North Island.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're the mainland in the South Island, so we've got the preeminent position. I'm from Christchurch, so yes, I'm a little biased when it comes to the North Island and the South Island. Lisa, your sort of introduction to mental health... where did that originate?
Good question. So I kind of come from a line of different women who've struggled with mental health. In fact, quite a few of them have been here in Carrington when it was a psychiatric hospital. So, and a lot of it was triggered by having children. So it was postnatal distress. So me personally, you know, I grew up around a lot of... mental distress and that sort of thing, and then and also struggling myself with it as well. And then I think when it came to the idea of having children, what I did is I thought, well, maybe I just won't have them, because every single female ancestor seemed to be fine until they had them, and then it all went pear-shaped. I thought, well, maybe I just won't have them. So any time I got into a relationship and started getting serious or talking about kids, I thought, oh, write them off. Off we go. And then, so anyway, fast forward a little bit, I met a guy at my birthday party, and he is actually a mix of Chinese and Tuhoi and Ngāti Porou. Quite an interesting mix, Māori Chinese. Anyway, we got on well, and not long after, he started talking about children, because he comes from a huge whānau. So, you know, all of his brothers and sisters have, you know, at least eight kids, if not more, and get started young, you know. So I was like, ah.
No pressure.
So when that sort of topic came up, I was like, ah. So I was quite honest about it. Anyway, I did get pregnant with my first child, and then panicked a bit. And after having my first child, I did struggle definitely with mental distress. And what I found helpful for me was, as I mentioned before, one huge thing for me was that, you know, that support, and that, you know, his whānau is huge and they're wonderful, and they basically pretty much moved in. And said,
really?
You're struggling, we come to help. So,
how many?
Well, quite a few.
The whole family?
Usually travel in groups of 30, yes.
Oh, right.
It's just wonderful, which I love, you know, because I...
You had the bus parked outside.
So she needs to rest, you know. You go have a moi, you need to do the washing, you fix some kai, you da-da-da. So everyone was doing stuff and helping, and that was wonderful. My family was the same, was really supportive. Friends, and then the SGI community, the chanting community, came in, you know, and supported with food and chanting and things. So I was personally so lucky to have all of that support, and I know a lot of people aren't, but it's how can we create our own support networks around us when actually we don't feel like we want it or need it right then. We feel like we want to isolate ourselves. And me personally, I was like, I just want to be alone, you know. But actually, that I found it was the best thing for me, having that connection.
Did
and
you,
that
you
support.
Got used to all the support and requested it full time.
Yeah, second child, I actually in advance said, right, who's moving in? Can you organise it now, please? Get it all organised.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, so for me, you know, one thing we talked quite a bit about in the training, as we mentioned, was these models of well-being. And just looking at Te Whare Tapa Whā, you know, the Māori approach to well-being, and I really love that idea of these four walls, you know, the taha wairua, the taha hinangaro, the taha tinana, and the taha whānau. For me, everyone's different in terms of what really helps. For me, the whānau, that family, that friends, that social wall was really important. But actually, I really need to make sure all four walls are in place for me all of the time. And when I start to struggle, I actually have a look back and go, okay, what's kind of missing here right now? So for me, the taha wairua is that sense of spirituality. For me, I do my chanting practice twice a day. I do also yoga, which goes into the tinana, the physical. I love walking, cycling. You know, I find when I'm struggling, I need to get outside, do some exercise, that sort of thing. And just in terms of the hinengaro, the mental, emotional side of it, for me, I have to get quite staunch with my self-care. And really listen to myself and go, I've just taken on too much, or I've got to set boundaries there, or actually I really need some time out right now, you know, because I have a tendency to take a lot on and get quite excited about things and then kind of burn out a bit. So that's really important. And of course the taha whānau. So for me it's always looking at which of those four things is kind of down a bit, and can I just, you know, really focus on bringing that back up so that all four walls are working together. And of course, they're all on the whenua, on the land, and I need to get out into nature personally, like West Coast, you know, have a walk on the West Coast beach, Karikari or somewhere like that, and that always makes me feel a lot better, gets things back into perspective.
On your own or with company?
Either way, but yeah, I just love, like when it's huge mountains and crashing waves, and I just go, oh, my problems I was so focused on have got smaller. So how that kind of gets them back into perspective a little bit.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's take a music break. Declan, what have you got for us today?
Well, firstly, I was just going to say, with babies, they're probably one of the few things that we get that doesn't come with a instruction manual or an off switch.
Absolutely.
Okay, the song I've got today was actually the very last song that was played on a station that closed in 1990 called Radio Caroline. I found it by sheer fluke, actually. I don't know, I think it's probably from the States. I don't know. But it's an ode to an unnamed DJ, and there were two versions of it, 3 minutes 53, that had the extended guitar solo, and the 3:15 minute had a... well, didn't have that, but they had different sides. B-sides were different on two of them, so go figure that one, because I can't. But anyway, here is Pilot of the Airwaves. It's by a lady called Charlie Dore, who's born in London of the UK, and you're listening to Take It From Us, Planet FM 104.6. We're Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday at 12:30.
Pilot of the Airwaves, here is my request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you'll do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
Any record of your choice, I don't mind. I'd be happy just to hear your voice saying this is for the girl. Sign her name. Guess she needs a dedication just the same. Late at night, I'm still listening. Don't waste my time chasing sleep. People say I look weary, but that's just the company I keep.
Ooh, you make the nighttime race. Ooh, I don't need to see your face.
You're sounding good.
Sounding good. My request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you'll do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio. Have you seen
friend to me.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm Sheldon Brown on Take It From Us, and that was Declan playing music. Today we're talking to both Lisa Brickell and Shreya Rao about tall trees. This is the latest Like Minds, Like Mine campaign, and in fact both Lisa and Shreya are mentors and facilitators, so they're going to be helping to train the champions of this Rakau Roroa campaign. But Lisa and Shreya have shared their a little bit about their experience of mental health. I just wonder, has it been a positive or negative experience? I mean, has it influenced you in coming in to work on Rakau Roroa?
I think with any mental health experience, while you're in it, you're kind of like, this is the worst thing ever. And then you get out of it and you're like, oh, yeah. That makes sense. So lots of positives and negatives, eh? I think for me the biggest insight I gained was this concept of resilience. Often people say, you know, when you go through hard stuff, you come out stronger. And yeah, I agree with that to an extent. But for me, my personal perspective is that I realised how strong I could be, and really gained an appreciation for the resilience, the inherent resilience that human beings have.
Yeah. Has that protected you from further experiences of mental health?
Yeah, and I think, like lots of people, I've had my ups and downs, and every time there's a down, it's kind of like, well, you've done this before, and you actually have skills that you can use.
You get some runs on the board, and it gives you confidence that you can...
Yeah.
Fall back on that resilience.
Yeah, and I think that's a really powerful thing for a young person, is when you have your first experience, it's kind of like the worst thing ever, and you really don't see that out. And then when you do come out the other side, it's like, oh, okay, there is another side. And I always hold on to that, and it's made things easier. It's made things quicker when I go back downhill again.
But have you been able to not fall right down the hole these days, that you've got this resilience and protection?
I think, you know, it's always the same things that lead me, you know, back down. But it's a different I see it in a different way. You know, it's a different element to have to deal with. Like, when I was younger and I was going through things, I didn't put two and two together. I didn't put what was happening to me at the time and what I'm feeling together and understand actually how those things linked up. And then when I got older, you know, I still experienced an intense amount of distress, but I understood how things in my life were potentially impacting the way that I felt. So I had a different approach to it. So I think for me, the big difference is just how I've approached it and how I've held the problem and how I've seen my role in terms of addressing the problem, and my expectations of other people too. So I don't expect people to save me.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all down to us.
Yeah.
We're the experts on our own health and mental health.
Yeah.
And I think a realisation of that, it's wonderful coming at your age, Shreya, because it took me another 20 years or 30 years before I realised that I was personally responsible for my own wellness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you, Lisa, the experiences you had with postnatal depression, in the end, was there a positive or a negative outcome?
Yeah, well, I think... Of course, as Shreya was saying, you know, during that time, it's definitely not positive in the middle of it all. But, yeah, definitely later for me, what I thought is that, you know, that idea of now I can help other people in a similar position with things that work for me. And again, of course, in terms of recovery, everyone's so different in terms of what works for them. But if I share some of my experiences and my stories and what's helped me, some of that might be able to help other people. And I think that's really the basis of Rākaurōroa, is that thing of people sharing their own stories of recovery and of hope means that other people might be able to take some bits from it, especially people who are really amidst it all and really struggling. There might be little bits that they can, that we might find.
Well, I think it gives you two great credibility, because you've been there, you've shared the pain, you know about the pain, and you have adopted strategies to try and prevent that from happening again. And those strategies can be useful to other people. Mm. I mean, it's not about giving advice, I suppose, but tell us a bit more about how you think Rākaurōroa is going to work for you two. I mean, you're going to be training and mentoring these people, but will you actually be out there, you know, promoting the messages?
Yeah, so I think where we see fit, really. One of the people in my group is in the theatre, does a lot of his own plays. So I'll be going out there supporting him in his future ventures, but also promoting it. There's also another young person in our group that identifies as South Asian, so from the same kind of areas where I was born. So I'm interested in talking to her about how we could potentially progress the anti-stigma and discrimination work in our community, because we're a little bit behind mainstream New Zealand on that front.
You mean in sort of the South Asian?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the impact of the Like Minds anti-discrimination and anti-stigma sort of campaign hasn't necessarily impacted the South Asian community.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, like most health promotion campaigns out there, if they target it towards the mainstream, only the real kind of health conscious, health seeking, kind of onto it educated people in the minority groups are going to be affected by those messages.
Right.
And it's why health promotion often targets the ones who need it the most, because we know that if we target them, we'll actually get the mainstream too. And I don't see... I think there was at one point some campaigns directed towards the Asian community, the Asian diaspora, which is huge. You know, East Asian, South Asian like I am, you know, parts of kind of what we think is the Middle East, you know, Afghanistan. Yeah. And I don't think... I think it needs to be a little bit more targeted towards specific groups.
Well, in the early days of Like Minds, when this radio show was funded by Like Minds, I used to go to the national conferences, and the national conferences used to treat New Zealand as a bicultural community. And, you know, I used to jump up and down and say, well, we have 400,000, I think it's Asian or Chinese in this, almost as many as the Maori. You know, when are we going to become a little bit more enlightened and include these people in this campaign? And, you know, people looked somewhat shocked at my comments, but I thought they were pretty relevant. And I think that the Mental Health Foundation certainly had a Chinese program in like minds called Kai Sing Sing Dong. Yeah. I came into this this interview today thinking that I was actually interviewing two of the tall trees, which I understand are the champions of Rakarara. And then it turned out that both Lisa and Shreya are really mentors and trainers. So, Shreya, when you talk about you've got a group of people that you, or both of you have, a group of people that you will mentor and train. And so what's involved in that, Lisa?
Yeah, so we have two separate groups. We have a group that we're going to be training, and so we're facilitating workshops all around the country. There's a big group of us facilitating a whole lot of workshops. And really looking at, you know, the key messages, like mind messages and National Depression Initiative messages, and how we can really reduce stigma and discrimination, and how we can tell our story safely, as we've mentioned. And so we're going to be running that. And then alongside that, we're mentoring some other people that will be involved in other trainings. We're not mentoring and training the same people. And we're mentoring them with a couple of things, but with there's a whole lot of pre-work before the training. We're helping them with that, but also the main thing we're doing is after the training, they instigate their own projects in society, so in the community somehow. So we're going to help them just make sure that they're working safely, that they've got the key messages clear, that they're not triggering people and that sort of thing with their projects, and really helping them with resources and that kind of thing.
So they are the people that are essentially the champions of Rakarara.
Yeah, these will be the people that go out there, and they're the tall trees or the champions. Yeah.
Right. So some of those messages that you're going to be conveying to them, Shreya, you've mentioned you have somebody from South Asia, somebody I think is working in the theatre as well. So what sort of things are you going to be saying to them?
So the training covers 7 different modules, covering, like Lisa said, power of contact, language, telling your story in a safe and effective way, the models of health. It's quite a diverse program covering quite a bit of information, legal frameworks that protect people from discrimination in their schools, workplaces, communities. For me, I think I'm facilitating the under 25 group, so we've got quite a few under 25s as part of the program. And for me, the key message for them, having talked to them over the phone, having heard their stories, is really around language, appropriate language. And what I really also would like for them to hear, because I think a lot of young people only hear one perspective when it comes to mental health, you know, usually the medical perspective. I'm really keen on them hearing different ways of seeing what is happening to you. And I think the Rakarara program covers that in a really beautiful way.
Right, well, let's come back after a music break and talk a bit more about that.
Right, I was just going to say, you're delivering the baby manuals to them. This song here peaked at number one in Sam's native Holland. It actually reached platinum, and its music video amassed over 2.3 million views. So if that hasn't raised your curiosity already, it's by Sam Felt, F-E-L-D-T. It's called Runaways, and you're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday right here on Planet FM 104.6 from 12:30.
Hey, little darling, we better
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm Sheldon Brown. We're talking to Lisa and Shreya from the Tall Trees Raka Rara campaign, a Like Minds, Like Mine campaign. Before the music break, Shreya mentioned the medical model, which I've been exposed to earlier this year, and is sort of pill dominated, which I have some push against. So, Shreya, you mentioned, you know, the prospect of alternative therapies. What are some that that you champion?
So, not specifically alternative therapies, but different models of mental well-being. So, we have one particular exercise that you kind of agree, disagree, or sort of partially agree with that statement. And statements are like, I believe that mental health is caused by chemical imbalances. I believe that mental health issues are caused by trauma in your life. And you sort of go around putting either a green dot, you agree with it, or an orange dot, no, you don't agree with it. And it's just a range of kind of statements across a range of different perspectives that people in our community have. When it comes to mental health, so spiritual, talked a little bit about that, psychological, social, all that kind of stuff. And it's just an exercise to illustrate to our tall trees that there are different perspectives, and you should be entertaining lots of different ideas, because they all mean there are different possibilities for you. There are different possibilities in terms of ways that you can enrich your life. There are different possibilities in the way that you can see yourself and relate to others. And none of them are, you know, better than others. It's just about kind of how you hold that and how you respect that for other people too.
What is the correct answer to the question that mental health is caused by chemical imbalance?
That's kind of the one thing that we haven't really proved, and that's kind of what we'll be telling. We don't actually have evidence around that, but certainly there are some prospects to pharmacological approaches to addressing mental health stuff.
Yeah, pharmacological solutions being medications.
Yeah, nutrition as well. That can have a huge impact on your physical health, which has a huge impact on your mental health.
Yeah. And walking, Lisa, on the beach at Karikari.
Oh, yeah, I love doing that. Yeah.
We do sort of tend to forget the wonders of those sorts of things. You know, we might sit at home and, I mean, I suddenly found just the waterfront of Auckland, you know, the Mission Bay, and walking around there or cycling around there or sitting at St Heliers having some sushi or something like that, you know. And it's a wonderful place to be walking.
I hope you leave your electronics behind. I've been a bit naughty. I only log into email every couple of days because I just think, oh, you just need that break. And I think that's where you can just de-stress, you know.
It's great having a break from it, isn't it, from technology. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I think I was just going to add to what Shreya was saying. I think with the thing I love about Raka Rara is that thing that, you know, everyone has such different perspectives on mental health and such different stories and different things that have helped them with their recovery, and none of them are wrong. Whatever's helped people, that's helped them, whether it's medication, whether it's walking at Karikari Beach or eating sushi
at
Mission Bay. But, you know, I loved, we did a whole lot of exercises around listening to all these different points of view and not saying, no, you're wrong, I'm actually right. Yeah, no, that's completely wrong. You know, we actually went, okay, that's your point of view, you know. Even when people say things to you that are actually really quite challenging, we talked about the curly questions sometimes you get. And instead of just going, no, we actually really listen and say, oh, where are they coming from? What's behind all of this? You know, and then just gently kind of steering them back into some of the key messages around this program.
I think that's very important too, because if people aren't listening, they're not learning. Mm. And you can get great empowerment from that, because, like, I've had my diagnosis for, what, many, many moons now, but I'm always learning something new. and always open to learning, because how do I know that somebody hasn't got something to share that's actually going to go, oh, righto, and that's going to help me in my journey.
Yeah, so it's being always open to learning. And that's, and you do learn from people that sometimes you think you might initially disagree with or something. Actually open to listening to them.
And never be ashamed to admit you've got a mental illness.
Totally.
The only thing I say to people is, when they say, oh, hi, my name's Tracy and I'm bipolar, I say, no, you're Tracy and you have bipolar, because otherwise you can easily identify with your mental illness as that being the whole core of you.
Yes, totally, yeah.
Yeah, well, there has recently been a program on TV3, I Am, the I Am program, and that has sort of adopted, I think, a dangerous sort of label, in that they said, I am Asperger's, or I am autistic, or I am a survivor of the state welfare system. It did sort of, I found it sort of,
It's the frog on the lily pad too. It's like, rather than looking at the negative, say, okay, I'm dealing with this, where do I want to go in the future? So it's that frog sitting on that lily pad, that's how I picture it, saying, where's the next lily pad for me to jump onto, because I want to move forward.
Yeah.
And if you dwell on the past and the negativity, you're not going to work through it. You can have all the medications you like, but as you say, going for that walk opens you up to nature. It brings you, it re-centres you, I think.
Yeah, I was trying to say that we're not the label that is often pinned on us.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm. What progress do you both feel we're making in breaking down this discrimination and stigma? I mean, mental health is undoubtedly high profile at the moment with the government's inquiry and issues around police meeting crisis situations and funding and all the criticism of the mental health system. Do you think we're making progress in this this campaign?
I think that's a really great question, and I just noticed with this play that I wrote, Mockingbird, which is all around about mental health, my own experiences and so on, we took it overseas. We've taken it to Australia and we've taken it to Norway, and in Norway it was really interesting. We were performing all around the west coast of Norway, quite small places, some big theatres, and afterwards we always have a forum, a Q&A, and talk about things that were raised and talk about, you know, support that is there if people need it and that sort of thing. And it was really interesting talking to people after the show in Norway, and that they said in Norway, you know, it's often so, we never talk about anything to do with mental health. You know, it's really hidden. If there's anything in your family, you hide it as hard as you can. Don't ever, you know, if you're struggling, don't tell anyone. And I was really surprised. I was thinking Scandinavia especially was so kind of liberal and forward in that way. But then I realised actually in New Zealand we are making some headway, and the forums we have here in New Zealand after a show are really amazing. People really open up and start telling their own experiences and talk about what's been helpful for them and that sort of thing much more easily than I found they did, say, in Europe or Norway and other countries. So though, you know, I think, oh, are we making progress? I think we are, you know, and I think all of these different campaigns have bit by bit just started changing things, and we've got a long way to go, obviously, but... Yeah.
It must be wonderful having those conversations after a performance because you'd get some feedback, I guess, some understanding of how people appreciated the messages. And
what the key messages they got. And a lot of people afterwards, in a more informal way, which was great, come up and just tell their story, or their story of their mother or their father or their... that they normally would keep hidden, which is amazing. Even just being able to start open up and... talking to people about things, I think, is a huge step towards any kind of recovery as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Denial's not a good solution for mental health. Well, mental health recovery. Freya, how do you think, you know, this campaign of addressing discrimination against those people that have mental health experience, think we're doing okay?
Yeah, I think the benefits have really been enjoyed by people who've had depression, anxiety. I feel like the conversations are happening more at that end. And certainly, you know, that's an experience that a range of people with a range of diagnosis can identify with. I think there's a long way to go in terms of addressing the stigma and discrimination against people who have psychosis and personality disorders. And I'm really pleased to say that our program has a number of tall trees who identify as having those particular lived experiences. And I'd love to have them champion those stories, their stories.
Yeah.
I think that at this stage, you know, we're so early on in this massive, you know, 10, 20 year plan, but I feel like we're moving towards an ideal place for our people. Like, I just look towards the people who came before us, you know, people who fought to have lives outside the institutions, have, you know, community-based services, have staff treat them with respect, have concepts like recovery embedded in our services. And I wonder, you know, like, they probably were at a position where they're like, are we making a difference? And they were, in a slow way. And I've, as a consumer advisor, I saw not those massive changes that I wanted to see, but those little light bulb moments in individual clinicians who I knew would champion what I said to them beyond my lifetime of working in that role.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting insight, that a lot of this work has focused very much on anxiety and depression with John Kirwan and the Like Minds program. Perhaps the government has found addressing psychosis and schizophrenia, bipolar, some of the more difficult diagnoses. It's been a little bit hard, or maybe we're just waiting for those programs to be announced and launched. Yeah, but it's good to hear that Rakaroa has people, champions that have that experience and can talk about it. And I think that's crucial, because clearly they're going to meet people with those same challenges. Well, let's take another music break. I think our guests have had an input in the choice of this particular track.
They have when I turn my mic on. It was just reminding me, actually, with the mentoring, firstly, I saw a nature program last night where a baby grizzly bear, went to go in and attack the beehive to get the honey. Not good. Sit back, pipsqueak, mum's coming in to champion the cause. Yeah, so it was quite good. And now this is another cover I'm playing for you. And it was originally done by the Bangles in 1989, which coincidentally is the same year this band was formed. They did this cover in October of 1999. It's originally, as I say, the Bangles. It's called Eternal Flame. It's by a group from Australia, and they are Human Nature. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting to you every Tuesday from 12:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
Yeah, and I'm Sheldon Brown. And before we wrap Take It From Us up today, I just wanted to ask Lisa about that issue of those more serious diagnoses, labels that still probably frighten people, like psychosis and delusion and that sort of thing. You've got some comment there.
Yeah, first thing I was just going to say is we've been working with Mockingbird with a group from Western Sydney University, and they've been doing a whole lot of research around particularly psychosis, and then we've rewritten the script with a whole lot of their research and working, so we've been working in Australia a lot with them. And in Australia, they were saying that psychosis is really barely recognised, you know, but it's such a high percentage of people that get it. And so it's been wonderful working alongside them and with Changing Minds as well and raising awareness around psychosis. But I was just reminded, we were talking about that, of a wonderful activity we did during the training called Turning Up the Volume. And it's just that thing of getting people aware that actually we've all got aspects of all of these things, and if we turn up the volume a little bit more, then we can, it gets classified as psychosis. But there's things like, for example, some song that just goes over and over and over in your head, and you can't seem to get rid of it. You know, we do the exercise, put your hand up if you've ever had that. Oh, yep, great. Or, you know, you think you heard someone call your name, and you turn around, oh, there wasn't anyone there. So things like this are all examples of hearing or seeing something that others around you cannot, which is actually examples, you know, when you turn up the volume with psychosis. And also things like mania, you know, you can't sleep because your mind's racing, or you've fallen head over heels in love, or, you know, or you're, you know, I spend a bit too much money on that thing. I really enjoyed that activity because it kind of normalised those sorts of things.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you both to Shreya and to Lisa for coming in to talk about Raka Rara and the mentoring and facilitating that both they are doing. And, we'll keep an eye and look forward to talking to representatives of Raka Rara from Changing Minds in the future. And, in regards to Tammy Allen, if she's listening, the CEO of Changing Minds.
Take It From Us Community Notice Board.
So there is a new film called Maui's Hook. It's by Maori psychologist and filmmaker Peora Joseph. It's showing, in fact, at the New Zealand International Film Festival right at this moment. And my understanding is that there is a screening of this at Westgate tonight at 6:30. In some ways, supporting families in mental illness is involved with the launch of this film. And we tried before our show today to learn where it's going to be screened later, if you miss it at the New Zealand International Film Festival. But it's called Maui's Hook. It's this new film which invites, here we go, a conversation or an open discussion of suicide through the brave testimony of five grieving families travelling to Cape Reinga. So look out for Maui's Hook. You could ring supporting families on 0800 732 825 to get more details. We weren't successful in doing that in the last 24 hours, but there may be some reasons for that. So that's Maui's Hook. We've just got one minute left. There is a August Network meeting coming up Thursday, the 30th of August. This is run by Equip. It's going to be at the Ko-Fi Lounge at Windsor Park Church at 550 East Coast Road, Mairangi Bay, on the 30th of August. You can RSVP to Our Voice at equip.net.nz. So it looks as though we've run out of time. Don't forget our survey on SurveyMonkey, and please email me if you haven't received that on sheldon.brown@framework.org.nz.
And of course, if you've got any music requests, get them in. I want to make sure I'm playing what you guys want to hear. So that's us for the week, isn't it? We'll see you all next week, same place, same time, 12:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
Thank you for listening.